Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Affney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to God's glory and that of his kingdom. We had an extraordinary conversation last Friday with a longtime contributor to this program, a very valued colleague, member of our Committee on the Present Danger, China, a career undercover operative of the Central Intelligence Agency, in other words, a spy, by the name of Charles Sam Faddis. And before we get to our next guest for his reaction to Sam's important insights, I want to just replay a brief clip from that extraordinary interview. We'll go to the video tape right now. The point that you've made, Sam, as an intelligence professional, is there's a distinction between having approached, having even recruited a targeted individual as part of an influence operation or, well, outright espionage, and controlling them. Using that distinction, would you conclude, based on what we know, that Joe Biden was not only targeted, was not only approached, was not only presumably the beneficiary of at least some of this largesse from the Chinese Communist Party, laundered through his son, laundered perhaps through his brother or others, but that he is controlled by the Chinese Communist Party as well?
Yes, that is my professional opinion. He was targeted and he is controlled.
We're going to get now a reaction to that astonishing finding by a man who used to run foreign assets for a living, from a man who served his country both in uniform and as a member of our Foreign Service. His name is Colonel Grant Newsom, United States Marine Corps retired. In addition to being a very accomplished national security practitioner in uniform, he also served, as I said, in our embassy in Japan as a Foreign Service officer. He's also worked extensively in the private sector in East Asia, and we're always delighted to catch up with him, a senior fellow of our Center for Security Policy and also a member of the Committee on the Present Danger, China. Colonel, thank you. Welcome back aboard, sir. It's good to have you with us.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks very much.
So let me just ask you, based on your extensive experience, not running spies, but certainly being in the world in which spies operate, would you concur with Sam Faddis's professional judgment that Joe Biden is a, quote, controlled asset, unquote, of the Chinese Communist Party?
Well, if Sam Faddis says it, you'd better sit up and take notice and take it seriously. Even if you don't have Sam's background, you know, just think about it. Suppose you wanted to work for the CIA and you filled out the application and you said, well, my son has done millions of dollars worth of business with America's greatest enemy, with the Chinese, and has very close relations to Chinese intelligence officers. My brother does too. And then they ask, well, do you have any, you know, connections with foreign governments? And, well, I've made a lot of money from the Chinese. What do you think they would say? It'd be like, get out of here. And they'd probably turn your name over to the FBI.
Or go direct to jail. Do not collect $200, likely.
You know, and also, you know, think if we could do this, say the Americans could do this to the leader of some foreign country. You have the just reverse the facts and say, we have some foreign leader, say the president of China, the dictator of China, has taken money from us, his children have, his brother has. My goodness, you know, we would be patting ourselves on the back for having that kind of success. So controlled asset or not, you'd have to ask the Ministry of State Security in China about that. But the evidence that we know and that is just commonsensically, you know, tells us that there is something really wrong here.
Well, the evidence is what I wanted to turn to next, Grant, and we visit most weeks with you, and you're very generous with your time, for which we're, of course, very grateful. But in the course of those conversations, not infrequently, I think, we've discussed the effects of the various policies that the Biden team has been adopting. Some of them are in the foreign policy arena and some of them are domestic, but I think they have two things in common. One is they're all bad for America. And secondly, they seem to be pretty much all good for the Chinese Communist Party. And if that were the case, it would certainly suggest that the guy is batting for the other team. Again, whether he is literally a controlled agent, whether he is an asset of some other kind, I don't know. But as you say, I think I would take Sam's characterization very seriously. So this leads to the question, do we have perhaps a Manchurian president on our hands? And if so, how serious a problem, and again, your professional judgment as a national security practitioner of renown, does that represent?
Well, it's a huge problem, of course, anytime you have, say, a president, no less, who has been compromised, you know, severely. And this is just sort of what we know. You know, any decent intelligence service has a lot of other stuff that they keep in reserve. And you wonder when that's going to come out. And it does shape your decision making. It has to. And you know, this is, there's simply no nice way around this. And, you know, this is a huge problem that we've got. One might note that, you know, the Biden administration has done some things, like the so-called CHIPS Act that cracks down on Chinese semiconductor industry, and it's sanctioned a few people. It put sanctions on ZTE, Huawei, some Chinese companies recently. So it has done some things that have pushed back on China. But at the same, also keep in mind that around Mr. Biden, you have a number of people in the foreign policy world, his advisory class, who have done extensive business on behalf of Chinese companies. Many of them have scrubbed their websites to remove it in sort of evidence of that. But you have a lot of people who've been pretty darn soft on China and made a lot of money from them for a long time. So the Chinese security services have absolutely got to be patting themselves on the back for what they've managed to accomplish.
This is a practice that has come to be known by the term they use for it, elite capture. And you're so right. In fact, Sam Faddis and our colleague Trevor Loudon have contributed to a website we call the Accountability Initiative, accountabilityinitiative.org. And I really commend it to all of our listeners. This is a resource on, I believe there's some 23 or 4 different dossiers on people in senior positions in the Biden administration or in the Congress. And just as you say, Colonel, this is evidence of compromise, shall we say, at the minimum. Let me ask about one other thing, Grant, before we turn to a short break. The FBI is charged in our government with being essentially the premier agency responsible for counterintelligence. What do we know about the role that they played in all of this?
Well, just on the face of the evidence that is clearly available, the FBI sat on the information about President Biden that came with his son's laptop, sat on it. And then when it was released, it appears the FBI collaborated with, say, Twitter, Facebook, to suppress information of it. And this is just breathtaking. And that there simply is no positive characterization to put on this. It's an embarrassment. It's worse than that, because people like us at our age, we grew up thinking of the FBI as a really good organization. But I think it has long since lost its way, unfortunately. At the working level, it's probably okay. But at the top levels, my goodness, it's got some shortcomings.
Well, we'll be talking more about this momentarily with Bill Walton, but I think it's a national security disaster. And we need to have it examined as such. We're going to come right back with more with Colonel Grant Newsom right after this. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Just before the 2020 election, 51 former intelligence officials falsely claimed that Hunter Biden's laptop was a Russian disinformation operation. Thanks to Elon Musk, we now know that Twitter colluded with Joe Biden's campaign, the Democratic Party, the mainstream media, and the FBI to prevent American voters from learning the truth, namely that the Democrats' presidential nominee and his family had knowingly taken millions of dollars from Chinese intelligence officers. A patriotic former U.S. spy named Sam Faddis, who recruited and ran Foreign Agents for America for many years, is convinced that as a result of this collective betrayal of the public trust, we elected as president a, quote, controlled asset, unquote, of Chinese intelligence. The new House of Representatives must make exposing and evaluating the potentially catastrophic national security repercussions of such a dangerous penetration and taking corrective action its first order of business. This is Frank Affney. Welcome back. Grant Newsom is in the house virtually. We're always delighted to catch up with Colonel Newsom. He is a retired United States Marine. He is also a very accomplished national security practitioner. And he is a man whose judgment on particularly the Chinese Communist Party, its agenda, and what we must do to defend ourselves against it is unsurpassed. And so thank you, Colonel, again for your time today. Let me ask you about another set of evidences, if you will, that also are something we need to be focused on. We have, in recent days, received several reports from the Defense Department. One sort of annual production chronicling developments, as they put them, in the People's Liberation Army. Another being a classified document. We're not quite sure what its contents are, but we'll speculate a little bit with you about that. But talk a little bit about what we are learning from these official sources concerning the quality as well as the of improvements being made to the Chinese military at the moment.
Well, the reports are actually very good, and they've been produced for a number of years. And if you just read them, even read the executive summary, and you will see just how the Chinese military has improved its capabilities, expanded its ability to operate farther from China, and it has been a steady upslope for a number of years. So the reports are very good in that sense. But what you really see, in particular, that stood out in this last one was the Chinese nuclear weapons capability development. And it's almost, in some ways, it's almost comical. And here's how that works. The report says, this year, says that China has maybe 400 nuclear warheads that you can reach America with. And for every report forever until this year, it said, they have 200 and they may have 400 by the end of the decade. And now suddenly they've got 400, they've doubled it. And this is your $80 billion a year intelligence community budget, plus whatever DOD throws in. And you ask yourself, well, they didn't know? What else have they missed? And keep in mind, and this is important, that about 10 years ago, a fellow named Dr. Phil Carver had a look at Chinese nuclear weapons capability, and he had his graduate students at Georgetown just take a look at the underground tunnels in China that you could use for hiding nuclear weapons. And he said, you know, maybe they've got a whole lot more than 200. And there, I'm told that the director
in 3,000 miles of tunnels, no less.
And you know, so I
stands to reason. Yeah,
she said, you know, they just might have it. And I'm told that the director of national intelligence actually put the word out to refute what he said. not to consider it or see it or weigh it in the balance, but rather say just to refute it and to professionally assassinate Dr. Carver. And now it turns out, well, that maybe he was right. And as I said, this is just nuclear weapons. You know, what else have they missed? So.
Right. Well, on this point, as you know, Colonel, Phil Carver was one of the participants in a fascinating and frankly terrifying webinar that our Committee on the Present Danger China sponsored last week. And I strongly commend that program, as all of ours, to our audience. You can find mm-hmm. them at presentdangerchina.org. And Phil Carver, among others, was very concerned that not only is the current estimate of 400 inaccurate, but the projections that the Chinese will treble that number by 2035 is wildly off as well. And let me just ask you about one aspect of this that goes to the question of what's in this second currently classified letter that was sent to the Congress by the man who at the time was and now has just recently left his post as the Strategic Forces Commander, Admiral Charles Richard. We believe that what it said is the Chinese already have more intercontinental range ballistic missile warheads deployed than we do. And that would mean that, as you suggest, they may be missing some other things as well, because among other facts, there are something like 360 silos now being built in the deserts of China, and reference is made to them in this report, to be sure, but we believe that those silos will house intercontinental range ballistic missiles capable of carrying 10 reentry vehicles, warheads, apiece, which would mean they'd have, 3,600 warheads just on those missiles, far more than the 1,500 or so that are being ascribed to them. This suggests, again, against the backdrop of what we talked about in the last block, that our intelligence services, like our counterintelligence services, are not up to the job, doesn't it?
Well, they haven't done very well. They just missed too darn much, particularly for $80 billion a year. And the important thing is, what else have they missed? You'll notice that just about every Chinese military advance has happened 20 years faster than the experts predicted. And there's been a condescension towards the Chinese, an idea that, well, they're just not smart enough. They'll never be our equals. Well, they're as smart as us. And we ought to start recognizing this. Plus, you have a
Some
group.
Some would argue
thing.
Smarter.
Give them credit where it's due. And there's a group think in the intelligence business that is stifling. And you've seen that on display. Anyone who said, we may have a problem with China was just ostracized, humiliated, punished, life was miserable for them. And now it's like, people are acting like they've discovered gravity. But so here, that's where we are. But it's also important to know how we got where we are.
Yeah. Grant, we recently had a conversation, I believe, about the fact that the Air Force has now decided to remove from permanent deployment in Okinawa, I believe, F-15 aircraft. Not quite our frontline fighters, but pretty good ones, if old. And one of the reasons why this is so parlous is we don't have anything like the numbers of F-22 aircraft that the Chinese really do fear in the inventory. And it goes to something that you just touched on, sir. We have far fewer of those aircraft than we need, for sure, and that it was obvious we needed. except for the fact that the Secretary of Defense, as I recall, it was Robert Gates at the time, or maybe it was Dick Cheney, but whoever it was, decided that because we actually projected the Chinese wouldn't have fifth generation fighters of their own for quite some time, as you say, we could safely truncate the purchase of our frontline fighters. It's a travesty. And these consequences, the consequences of those decisions, I should say, may include the needless loss of American lives and maybe even defeat in the Europe.
It'll be once sailors and lance corporals, these young people, these deplorables from flyover country who die in large numbers to make up for the mistakes of our ruling class. And what you've described with the F-22s, it was Secretary Gates. And the idea was, well, China is not an enemy. It's not even an adversary. It's a competitor, maybe, sort of like Avis and Hertz fighting over who's the best rental car company. And they will never have to fight them. It's not an issue. And the only wars we will fight in the future are insurgencies. Therefore, we don't need F-22s. And how wrong can you be?
Mortally wrong, alas. Grant Newsom, you're right. We're very appreciative of your sharing your insights with us each week. Come back to us again next week, if you would. We'll be right back with Bill Walton on this subject and more right after this.
And throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa, provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
We're back. We are joined, as we have the privilege of being most weeks, by Bill Walton. He is a man who has distinguished himself as a master of the universe on Wall Street for a time, president of Allied Capital Corporation. He has also distinguished himself here in Washington as a very important figure in the conservative movement, including serving as president of the Council for National Policy, which I'm proud to be a member. He has now the host of a terrific podcast television program. You can see it on the American Conservative Union's television system, among other places. It's called The Bill Walton Show, and we are delighted always to catch up with him. Bill, welcome back to Securing America.
Frank, great talking with you.
Thank you. I want to start with the theme of the day. We did an interview last Friday with a longtime career undercover clandestine service officer for the Central Intelligence Agency, who I think you know by the name of Charles Sam Faddis, a fellow member of our Committee on the Present Danger, China. And he said, based on his professional experience and judgment, that he considers Joe Biden not simply to have been compromised by the Chinese Communist Party, but that he is actually what they call in the business a controlled asset, unquote. We spoke a little bit about it with Grant Newsom a moment ago, but I'd like to get your take on both the, well, evidence of that and the implications, if it's true.
Well, I think the headline point is that the Hunter laptop issue is not about Hunter. It's about Joe Biden. And, you know, the FBI has had this laptop for over 3 years. And, you know, as Sam puts it, Hunter's a waste. I mean, Hunter got kicked out of the Naval Academy for drug use, and he has nothing that the Chinese would ever want. I mean, maybe you give the guy $1 million or something to see what he does, but unless he comes back with some deliverables, you're not going to keep funding money to him. Well, they did. The Chinese Communist Party kept funding money to Hunter time after time after time. It ended up mounting into the tens of millions. And, you know, we know we've got references to the big guy. Well, the question that remains is, why did the FBI sit on this laptop, remains to sit on a laptop? Why were they behind the meetings with Twitter before the 2020 election to ensure that the New York Post story would be buried, which talked about the laptop and what might be in it? You know, Sam is such an experienced operator and has worked with so many so-called information intelligent assets. I guess that's the word for people doing your bidding. And he says the Chinese would not have kept sending this money unless they were getting a deliverable. And that's what we think is in the laptop. Now, why the FBI, and this was when Donald Trump was president, would weigh in on behalf of the Biden campaign to stifle this is one of those very interesting trails that we need to follow. This stinks to high heaven. You know, of course, one of my skepticisms, as you accuse me of being a recovering Wall Street guy, is Joe's perfectly capable of taking the money and not delivering. And so what I'd like to see, and I think what's in the laptop, is just one evidence of a deliverable. And if that turns up, as I think we would find, that's devastating.
Well, as it happens, Bill, as part of our ongoing series of webinars sponsored by our Committee on the Present Danger China on Thursday from 1 to 2:15 p.m. Eastern Time, we're going to have a deep dive on the laptop with a man who's been studying it closely a long time. Assistant to Peter Navarro when they were in the White House together by the name of Garrett Ziegler. And I think we're going to find some very fascinating, well, as you say, evidence of what Joe and his family actually did provide the Chinese.
Well, if I could give a quick promo to you, Frank, I mean, these webinars you do are incredibly interesting deep dives into something that most people are not covering. Or if they're covering it, they're covering it very superficially. With 2-minute takes. I think this is an opportunity to find out what's really going on. So I'll be very interested in that.
Thank you for the compliment. Back at you. You do this same kind of deep dive each week with your program as well.
You got to go deep or you don't get anything.
Well, that's right. And you know, the other point that you made, and again, we talked a little bit about this, I think, with Grant Newsom, is what was the FBI doing? As Sam points out, this is the front line of defense of our country in the counterintelligence space. And if they not only weren't revealing what was going on and preventing the accession to the presidency of a man who was compromised, as they had the evidence of, but they were actually suppressing that information so that the voters didn't know about it. I mean, this stinks to high heavens. It is high crimes and misdemeanors, that seems to me.
Well, based on unlikely and stunning reversal of fortune evidence, which I don't think is forthcoming, this is extremely bad. And of course, we've been talking about Twitter and the other social media platforms influencing elections, influencing everything. But the government hasn't been doing it. Well, here's a direct link between the FBI and Twitter executives with weekly meetings instructing Twitter how to handle this story, which they buried.
Right. Scandalous in the extreme. Bill, let me turn to another scandal, I think it's fair to say. You and your wonderful broadcasts featured frequently, as have we over the years, the late now, alas, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, who spent much of his professional life in the Central Intelligence Agency, then on Capitol Hill in various commissions and committees, warning about the vulnerabilities of our electric grid. And we're now watching in small examples thus far, thank God, attacks directed at substations in North Carolina and Oregon and Washington State, who knows where all else. This could only be probably a subset of a larger problem we may yet encounter. Not least because we've got the Chinese Communist Party's equipment, as they say, literally inside the wire. Give us a sense of how serious a problem you regard this to be, and how urgent is it that we rectify it?
Well, the electronic grid, the electrical grid, we've got three big ones in the United States. I think Texas has its own, is one of the biggest security risks we face as Americans. And you came on the show with Peter Pry two years ago, the great Peter Pry, I might add, to talk about a word called, or a term called EMP, which is electromagnetic pulse. And what he described, and an entirely shameless self-plug, I think everybody ought to get on the show to talk, to see what you and I were talking with Peter about. If there's an electromagnetic pulse caused by either natural occurrence or by a nuclear weapon detonated up in the atmosphere, it would melt down the electrical grid. And if you think about that, it's not like your lights go off. It's not like it's an inconvenience. It's that your life goes off. And if you think about your wealth, your bank accounts, well, most of us only see our wealth through the computer, through the internet, through the cloud. Well, if the cloud goes down, all of a sudden everything in America stops working. And Peter estimates that if we had a massive outage of the system, up to 90% of Americans would die. And that's either through starvation, disease, societal collapse. Imagine the vigilantes that would be occurring with no power in America. This is a real, real, real threat. And I think there's a new film coming out called Grid Down, Power Up, which illustrates the dangers of this. And the thing that was so upsetting about Peter's alarm bells was that nobody was doing much. Well, this documentary gives us some action plans and wants to get people involved in a movement to do something about the grid, making the grid safer, less vulnerable to attacks, either through natural or through electromagnetic pulse from a nuclear detonation or some bad actors hitting a few power stations, will only cost $3, $4, $5, $10 billion to put in place the protections we need, and compare that to the $90 million or $80 million or whatever the number is we've sent to Ukraine, and the almost a trillion dollars of tax credits we've given to green energy investors. This is a drop in the ocean, and it's definitely money that we ought to be spending. And now,
You made so many really important points there, Bill, and I just want to emphasize that 90% of Americans who will perish is if there's not only a widespread but a protracted downage. But
yeah, it lasts a year. Yeah.
And that's the point. We've been told endlessly that, well, it's about the money. We just don't have the money to do it. Not only is your point so well taken that it's chump change compared to money that we've got sloshing around for other things. But there's actually been $1.2 trillion that has been authorized and appropriated by the Congress for what? For infrastructure. There's no more important aspect of infrastructure than protecting the only grid we have. Yes, it's in three parts, but it's one we all depend upon critically. Bill, you're a clarity on this point and what you've done with your program, The Bill Walton Show, available all over the place. is really important. I am so grateful to you for it, as well as joining us to talk about it, among other things.
Everybody should take a look at episode 90. Frank, you were brilliant in it.
Thank you. I hope they'll look at that one and the other ones that Peter Pry was brilliant in. Thank you. Bill, we'll talk to you again soon.
Great. Take care.
Stay tuned for more right after this. Thanks for tuning in to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney. If you find the content of this program to be informative and valuable, I'd like to ask you to consider playing a part in supporting the organization that makes Securing America possible, our Center for Security Policy. We call the center the home of the special forces in the war of ideas. We feature such warriors daily on Securing America as they diagnose the dangers facing our nation, develop strategies for thwarting them, and work with other veteran national security practitioners, legislators, and the American people to execute those strategies. Thanks to our friends at the American Family Network, we're able to expand greatly awareness of the Center for Security Policy's efforts and their impact. Like the real special forces, our effectiveness depends on having the ammunition, in our case money, to perform our mission. Please consider making a tax-deductible contribution at securefreedom.org. Thanks. We're back, and I'm very pleased to say we are joined by another of our very valued contributors here at Securing America. He has served his country in a number of capacities with great distinction as a naval intelligence officer, as a congressional counsel in the Reagan and George H.W. Bush White Houses, and most recently as an assistant secretary of state under George W. Bush. In all of these capacities, he has brought great clarity, I think it's fair to say, to the kinds of national security challenges we confront. And particularly in light of his experience in the White House, I'm anxious to talk with him about the subject of the day, namely a conclusion reached by our friend and colleague Sam Faddis on this program last Friday, that the commander-in-chief is, quote, a controlled asset, unquote, of the Chinese Communist Party. And Bobby, let me just say, I think you've seen the interview, or parts of it at least. We played just a short clip of it at the beginning of this program. I commend to all of our listeners the full version of it. Highlights of it are available at presentdangerchina.org, and Real America's Voice and our website, securingamerica.tv, have the full three-part interviews as well. But Bobby, I welcome your thoughts on whether what we're dealing with, as I put it to Grant Newsom earlier in the program, is a Manchurian president.
Yeah, so of course your reference is to the famous movie, The Manchurian Candidate, which was released in the 1960s. Incidentally delayed, by the way, because of the Kennedy assassination. People were terrified that they put two and two together on that and come up with a different conclusion than the one that the Warren Commission had found. I think the problem we've got, Frank, I think all questions are worth asking. And I think questions we've never asked before are worth asking. I, as you know, spent a lot of time as an investigator. My disposition is
on
to
Capitol Hill specifically, right?
5 years running, actually for 5 years running the committee that did the oversight into the Justice Department and ran the Waco hearings. And I'll tell you, there's a great propensity when errors are made at the top of the FBI. And really, this does relate directly to the FBI, because the FBI is the one that was indicating to the Twitter, we now know to Twitter, and perhaps to other social media, that they should frame the indicting material that was on the laptop belonging to the president's, at that time, vice president's son, as if it was Russian disinformation, which of course it was not, because they had the bona fides on the computer itself. I have a piece out, by the way, on AMAC.us today, and I encourage people to go to it, Frank, because it goes right to your point. It's about the fact that this is really not Hunter Biden's laptop. At the end of the day, this is not about Hunter Biden. This is about Joe Biden. This is about the president of the states being compromised in concrete ways and making admissions that he was compromised in concrete ways in the text of emails and other material on that laptop. So where does that lead us? I mean, this is like the breadcrumb exercise. You know, if you don't follow the breadcrumbs, you're failing the American people as an investigator. If you do follow them, they may lead where you think they're going to go, and they may go somewhere else. But I am deeply concerned, Frank, and I guess I would put it to you this way. I think I have a hard time believing that Joe Biden is even cognitive of the idea that he would be as you said, an asset of the CCP. However, when you pour water, and one of the reasons I say that is because when you pour water into a sieve, it comes out all the holes. And I think there are far more leaks in the Justice Department and the FBI, some of them intentional, some of them accidental. I think what we're going to find out, Frank, is that there's a lot going on that we didn't know. And the way you find that out is Congressional Oversight 101. They have to put massive document production requests in front of the Justice Department and White House. They have to insist that the courts enforce them. They have to do the same thing with interrogatories. They need to bring whistleblowers in front of them. They need to invite whistleblowers to full protection so that those who are hesitant recognize that their careers will not be destroyed. They will be protected. This is the way you always get to truth with oversight hearings. And I ran dozens and dozens of oversight hearings. Waco itself, 98 witnesses, more than a year of investigation. We did 13 days straight of 12 hours a day on C-SPAN to get at the truth, and we got at the truth. So the part here is that we now have finally one chamber of Congress that is interested in the truth. And I don't know where it will lead. I don't know where the breadcrumbs go. But Frank, we are asking questions that are justified, and we're asking questions we have never had to ask before of a president or really of a Justice Department or a White House. And that's.
Let me ask you specifically, Bobby, with your experience overseeing and working with, I'm sure, in your capacity at the State Department, responsible for, among other things, law enforcement affairs, with the FBI, I'm talking about, their conduct, as now revealed by the disclosures from Twitter that Elon Musk has made possible, suggests a very, very problematic sort of level of activity. And not least, as I've said to our previous guests, Bobby, from the agency that is charged on behalf of the United States government with counterintelligence. Just give us a minute on all of that, if you would.
Sure. So there are about 300, maybe a few more than that, FBI agents around the world. We have about the same number of DE agents around the world. For obvious reasons, drugs are a massive issue globally. The FBI is involved in everything from counterterrorism to counterintelligence. Incidentally, those two worlds overlap each other. A lot of drug money tends to go into terrorist organizations, and that's what we'll forget. But the bottom line is that the FBI is a very, I did work with the FBI, and I worked collaboratively with them. Remember, I was working at what I would call the lower political or the sort of operational side of an agency. Oftentimes, you'll get an infection at the top of an agency, and although it can flow down, the reality is, whether it's in this country or any other country, by and large, you can have very honest people at the operational level trying to do their jobs. And I think right now what we've got is some really significant open questions. You know, I'll tell you, I had very few exchanges at that time with Chris Wray. I did have a couple, and I found him to be, frankly, not very transparent. I mean, one of the issues that I had, and I'll give it to you in a nutshell.
Hold the thought, Bobby. We have to take just a very short break. I want to hear about your insights into the non-transparency of the director of this, now the director of the FBI, among other problems with his conduct. We'll be right back with more with Robert Charles right after this. Welcome back. Robert Charles is in the house virtually. We're delighted to catch up with him always. A man who has had extensive experience at senior levels of the executive branch of our government, but also in key roles in the staff of the legislative branch in the House of Representatives, and also as an appellate court clerk in the Ninth Circuit early in his career. These days, he's with the Charles Group, and importantly, he is a spokesman for a terrific outfit, of which I'm very pleased to be a member, the Association for Mature American Citizens. You can follow his writing there at amac.us. Bobby, you were just saying you found a man who is now the director of the FBI earlier in his career not to be terribly transparent. You had a particular insight into that. I want to get that quickly.
Sure. The nutshell version is that at the top of our government, we interact with each other a lot. And when I was the Assistant Secretary of State for Colin Powell, I interacted a lot with the Justice Department because they run some programs that we work with them on. The reality was that Chris Wray was, to my view, a bit disingenuous because the issue I had to deal with him on is that everybody in the United States military and everybody in the United States State Department who operates on foreign soil in dangerous environments, and we run an air wing, and we have a lot of State Department personnel who are operational, expeditionary, are in a lot of dangerous way. And we always wear a vest that has four plates, two, and one big one in the back. These particular vests are very valuable because they stop a 50 caliber bullet. However, the Justice Department decided in their wisdom they wanted a more convenient, lightweight, less protective vest. And I went over to explain to Mr. Wray at the time that his people involved in a couple of programs that we had over there were actually safer using these heavy vests, which are a little bit harder to walk around in, than they were sort of a snakeskin thing that was paper thin. What I found was that when he gets on a position, he just sticks with it. And even though logic seemed to push in a different direction, his job, I guess you could call it an internal political persuasion, was that he was going to just advocate for something regardless. And I do at the end that, if you really don't want the answer, don't ask the question. And the question was, how do I best protect my people? And his answer was, whatever they want, not this is the best protection. So.
Yeah. Well, he's protecting his people now, that's for sure. And I'm afraid that he's protecting them rather than our people more broadly. And that's really very problematic indeed. Bobby, I did want to hit one other topic before we have to let you go. We've had the law enforcement community successfully apprehending a man accused of being the bomber of the Pan Am 107 flight over Lockerbie, Scotland, 34 years ago. He is now in custody. He will be prosecuted for that terrible crime. This is happening against the backdrop of a prisoner swap. Brittany Griner, the basketball star in Russia, for Viktor Bout, an arms merchant of death, as he's been called, that had been held in federal custody here for a 25-year sentence. This is very ominous, it seems to me, on several counts. One is Viktor Bout is a bad guy, and you don't want him at loose, not least, helping rearm the Russians for their war in Ukraine. But also that the exchange that resulted from this deal by the Biden administration is unfortunately, I think, reinforcing the idea that if you take American citizens hostage, you can, get them ransomed by getting back people that you'd want. They left a Marine in prison over there, alas, in favor of getting this gal out. But beyond all of that, a question occurs to me. Wouldn't it be entirely likely that somebody in Libya will think it a good idea to grab an American and demand the release of this fellow al-Marimi in exchange?
So let me say, I don't think there will be any release of this terrorist, because that would be beyond the pale, in my view. I really don't even think this administration would do that. However, having said that, the incentive immediately is created. And you're right, when you put these two bookends together, it creates a sort of an odd turn. Three or four simple observations. One is that traditionally these things are done quietly, not the way that this one was done. This was very public. Second, they're usually proportionate, as in, you know, we don't give away the king for a pawn, but at the same time, every American citizen in their own way is a king. And so I guess we needed to get her back. We need to get back the other, I'll say, hostage, a captive that is being held by Russia today. At the same time, you're always messaging. This is the problem. Substance is communication. Substance is messaging. And so when we make a swap of this nature, the natural thing that bad guys think is that maybe, and this is even state level, apprehensions. We know that this was done historically, has been done in North Korea. It's been done in a lot of places where they think, well, now we've got an administration on our hands who is willing to give us things for American people. And so it puts American people on foreign soil in greater peril. So I think everybody should be alert to the fact that Americans overseas are always a target. And when there are high level events that create a sense of opportunity for bad guys, they always go, the water rolls downhill. They go wherever they think they can go and make hay. So mixing metaphors there. I think at the end of the day, Frank, we just have to be aware. I'm always glad that an American gets home. Don't get me wrong. I just think that a lot of that is typically done quietly, not publicly, until the end. A lot of it is done in ways that I'm a little surprised we didn't get both of our citizens back. But having said all that, just be on guard. I mean, absolutely. Once these two events coming side by side, will put in the minds of bad guys the idea that somehow they can take advantage of us, and we have to be crystal clear that they can't do that.
Yeah. And I think it's almost certainly going to be the case that there will be Americans who will lose their lives as a result of this merchant of death being back on the street. Very troubling stuff. Bobby, as always, we appreciate your insights into them and a little bit of personal history there to boot. Thank you for the work you do these days at amac.us. Keep it up, my friend. I know you will come back to us again soon. Hope the rest of you will join us again for our next edition, and that you enjoyed this one, and that you feel better equipped to help us protect the country we love. Now, go forth and multiply.